And good morning, good morning, good morning, good people. It is 7 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are here, positively revolting as ever. We hope you are too. And there's a lot going on, perhaps you've noticed. It's and I have to say, I love the song that just played, Billy Bragg's Waiting for the Great Leap Forward.
And it's Billy Bragg.
And that's always lovely.
Yeah, the lovely Billy Bragg.
And I have to say, there is no need to wait for the Great Leap Forward. Just start leaping. It is a very exciting time in which we find ourselves. Last I spoke to you, a couple weeks ago, we talked a fair amount about the occupation of Wall Street that was to start the next day. And it is, very exciting, I think, for me to see that 2 weeks later, there is a core group that is still holding things down, that people, it's a growing movement that cities across the country are joining in this occupation style format.
And I believe Portland will be one of them.
Portland is, in fact, one of them. And I have a little information before we get into the tempeh of the show. I should just give folks a little teaser, I suppose. Coming right up, we will be talking permaculture with Matt Bebo, who is here with us in studio. But just at the very onset, to let folks know, if you are interested, if you've been inspired by the occupation of Wall Street, if you would like to be a part of a general assembly, putting your voice into the mix, putting your priorities into the mix of where it is we need to go as a movement, what demands we are making to try to get us towards a democracy. These are things that you can get involved with right now, even today. So today is actually the second General Assembly meeting for the Occupy Portland group. Occupy Portland will start their encampment, will start their rally, will kick off, as it were, on October 6th. That's just next Thursday. So tonight at 7 o'clock, there is the second General Assembly meeting. If you are interested in becoming a part of this at the get-go, then 7 o'clock tonight, there is a General Assembly meeting at the north end of Tom McCall Waterfront Park. So the north end of the Waterfront Park.
Just Google Occupy Portland for info on that, too.
Well, I was going to go ahead and
give the rest. Please.
Say a couple of things. There's an email address, occupyoregon@gmail.com, if you are interested in meeting on October 6th for further legal training. The National Lawyers Guild has a little update. Training for legal observers will be offered during or directly following the General Assembly meeting tonight.
That's so excellent, because that's really important stuff to have that going.
Legal teams, very, very,
very
important.
Very important, yes.
If you are wanting more information, occupyportland.org is the URL. That's occupyportland.org. There is also a Facebook page. You can, if you are so inclined to be Facebook-ly, search Occupy Portland, and you can join the Facebook group as well. So wanted to get all that information out there. And of course, then that leaves us to next Thursday, the 6th, which is actually kickoff, as we were, for the 99% no longer willing to remain silent. So October 6th at noon, thousands gathering at Waterfront near Southwest Ankeny and NATO Parkway to march to Pioneer Courthouse Square. So there will be a rally at Pioneer Courthouse Square. And then
is that what we'll be occupying as Pioneer Courthouse Square? Is that clear?
No, I believe that so far there's been people deciding, and of course everything's decided by General Assembly, right?
Yeah.
So I believe that at this point that decision is having Waterfront Park occupied, as it is an extraordinarily there's a lot of traffic, it's very visible, and there are sections of it that run alongside several of the larger financial interests in town. So I believe that that's how they have picked this.
a fine location for an occupation.
Go get some information yourself. Yeah. Again, that General Assembly meeting tonight at the north end of the park. I believe under the, goodness gracious me, look at that. I've changed pages and now I can't remember when the General Assembly meets. The
I've
north end of
Tubman. I've lost my page and I can't get
back. Oh my God. It's the north end. Yes, yes it is. 7 o'clock tonight, north end of Tom McCall Waterfront Park. I believe there is, you'll see them.
And
see
we are a call-in show. So we're going to talk to Matt. And if you have questions about or comments about permaculture or occupying things.
What the heck?
Give us a call. 503-231-8187 and at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. I promise to check the email while we're on the air.
Oh, yeah, right. We have that.
We do.
So good morning, Matt.
Good morning. How are you doing?
We're doing well. I think, let's see. Matt is... This is the secret code to the engineering pixie. Matt is on the yellow mic. Okay.
No, he's on the red mic.
Oh, damn. I've got my codes mixed up. Good morning, Matt. Let's see if you're there yet now.
Oh, that's much better. Thank you.
Ah, he's here now.
That's so good. Good morning. So thanks very much for coming down this morning.
That's my pleasure.
I'm very excited to see the Northwest Permaculture Convergence happening. I remember when last we spoke, Matt, it was around the village building convergence.
That's right.
And I remember saying that, you know, closer to this thing in the fall, we'll have to have you back. We'll have to talk more about this. First, to let people know who you are, Matt Bebo is the core organizer of the Permaculture Convergence, a core organizer of the Permaculture Convergence, a four-day event focusing on proactive solutions to meet the social, ecological, and economical needs of our times on a scale that builds both community and local resiliency. You are very involved in the permaculture movement, and it's fabulous to just have you back with us this morning.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. You know, it's always nice to have the opportunity to share some of the things that are coming up in this world. So you know, they're very exciting times and people are always wondering, well, what can I do? And sometimes a little bit of inspiration can go a long way. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
I think that's very, very true. Let's start off just to give folks a little background. Permaculture. You know, a lot of people, I think, feel like permaculture, well, that's something that you do if you have land. That's something you do if you live in the country. That's a really good, that's a great option if you've got some land in the country. But it's not just about that. Permaculture is for anyone.
Yeah, that's right. And I think one of the efforts that the permaculture educators are really working on is to let it be known that there's so much more to permaculture than gardening in your yard. And a lot of the more popular texts do use home gardens or agriculture as the basis. And it is true that the root of permaculture, or where permaculture came from now, it's actually the word itself, it's inherent, permanent agriculture. That's its history. Yet we've found that all of these lessons learned from nature that we can apply to growing food in a way that doesn't degrade the environment can also be applied to our social setting. It can be applied to our financial situation. It can be applied to so many things. It's a design. It's a way of looking at things in a whole systems kind of way. And so there really aren't any limits or bounds to it. Really, our creativity is the limiting factor in the majority of these cases.
And to me, it seems very much about designing, I mean, really consciously designing our lives to be in balance with the ecosystems that we find ourselves living in, whatever that ecosystem looks like, a way of finding and building community together that actually respects place and time and human needs and brings those things into focus and how we organize ourselves and how we be.
That's right. You know, it's funny because so much of my background is with environmental science and biology, ecology. There's a lot of emphasis on not just the competition, but the cooperation or the collaboration. And I think that's something that's really important to translate to our human situation is that it's not everything's not inherently competitive. We like to have a competitive lens on everything. And so when we're looking at ecosystems and it's like, oh, this is keeping this in check and this is keeping this in check, that's happening and that's true. But there's so much more that's happening below the surface, you know, like in the soil, for example, of plant species cooperating with each other, to thrive together. this term guild comes up a lot. And so we can translate that to humans and look at, well, what are our social guilds? What are our relational guilds? And how can we support each other? And it's really that that essence of support and collaboration that's at the foundation of a lot of this work.
Excellent. And the permaculture convergence coming up then. There is a weekend of a conference, convergence, gathering, skill sharing, workshops. But there's also events before that that are open to the public. Can you give folks a little taste of what's coming up in just a couple weeks?
Yeah, I'd love to. So when we're putting together this event, the design committee really wanted to have it be as accessible as possible. That was, you know, one of the foundational design elements of this, that we want people to be able to come to this. And this event has been in Washington for the last 3 years. That's why folks maybe haven't seen it or heard of it around here yet. The Washington organizers thought it would be nice that Oregon had a turn, and so this is Oregon's year. And it seemed to be settling in and around Portland, which is really exciting. The venue that we ended up finding for this is at the Columbia County Fairgrounds, so it's a little bit north of the city by about 40 minutes or so. But we wanted to have in-city event. It's true that you know, right now over half of the world's population lives in an urban environment. The solutions that we're coming up with really need to have an urban focus. Mm-hmm. And so on Thursday, prior to the 3 days at the Columbia County Fairgrounds, we'll have free events here in Portland, and there are going to be a number of bike tours throughout the day. For those of you who attended the Village Building Convergence this year, we're going to be at that same venue for the Thursday events where the bike tours are going to start. That is the St. David of Wales Episcopal Church, 2800 Southeast Harrison Street. And throughout the day, starting about 10 o'clock in the morning, we're going to lead a number of bicycle tours so that folks can check out firsthand some of the amazing projects that are going on in town. You know, some of these projects might have been the initiative of a neighborhood, might have been assisted by city repair through the Village Building Convergence, might just be somebody's amazing effort in growing food in their yard. For example, Connie Van Dyke has that really incredible urban farm in her yard, and so we're going to take a tour there as well as to the Planet Repair Institute to Try and Life Community Farm. We really want to show the folks who either haven't seen too many examples in town or who are coming from out of town what's possible in the urban environment. It's quite remarkable. And then in the evening, we'll have a community dinner. Of course, we have to share food together.
Of course.
It wouldn't feel complete without that. And then we have a series of panelists that will be exploring the theme, Finding Common Cause. And what's unique about this particular panel is that the panelists then switch their own roles, and they'll serve as moderators in a World Cafe-style breakout session where we'll really ask everybody to contribute their vision for the future and how we're transitioning to a more resilient neighborhood, more resilient community, and then extract some of that information and bring that to the convergence at the fairgrounds for further discussion and planning. And who knows what will come out of this. I'm hoping that it'll be just what we need, because of course these are the times that we need to find solutions pretty quickly.
It's very much so.
It's been really heartening to me. When I was a kid 100 years ago, people that were immigrants would, you know, like grow vegetables in their front yard, and everyone just thought they were horrible. Oh, is that old woman? And now it's really nice to see people using their space, their urban space, so wisely that is starting to be something that's not just acceptable, but encouraged, and it's beautiful also. I think yards growing things that are with, you know, having whatever your little property is, growing things that work is just so much more gorgeous than flat grass.
Yeah, that's true. And I'll mention a phenomenon that I think has been helping this movement as it gets more full grown. And that's the tipping point of some of these things. Now, whenever I bring family or guests, friends to Portland, one of the first things that they'll say is like, the gardens are so incredible in this city. And a couple people's reaction is like, wow, it's like a little wild. And I really, you know, I can't tell what's going on in there. And so, you know, that's the sort of tipping point. Portland has done an amazing job. The people of Portland have done an amazing job re-envisioning how they can use their space. And we're really at the foundation of that, transitioning from a culture of get all that you can and try to, like, you know, acquire as much as you can, to just having as much as you need. And it's really incredible what you can do with a fifth acre yard. Just check out Connie Van Dyke's place and see that she's growing the majority of her food for the whole year in this urban lot. It's possible. We have to think beyond just growing flat gardens. You know, we're incorporating fruit trees and trying to utilize the vertical space more, of course. That's how we can really fit
thing.
In more stuff.
Yeah.
There are some restaurants in town. Noble Rot, for example, has an incredible rooftop garden that's managed by a couple of friends of mine, Mark Boucher-Colbert. And
what is it they do with water?
Well, I'd imagine they're capturing rainwater.
I think so.
You know, that's a resource that's fairly underutilized. And in some places in the country, it's actually illegal to capture. That's
really?
A whole other issue, legalizing sustainability. And give a shout out to Brenna Bell and the Recode effort that sprung out of Try and Life Community Farm to actually make sustainability legal. Talking gray water.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. First of all, again, that phone number, if you want to join in the conversation this morning, is 503-231-8187. You could also email us if you prefer the nonverbal method of communication this morning. You could try emailing us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. Again, the phone number, though, the easiest, the tried and true method, 503-231-8187. Matt, we are talking with Matt Bebo. We're talking about permaculture and the Northwest Permaculture Convergence, which is coming right up October 13th through 16th in Portland and beyond. And we have, I think at this point, looking at how people really... losing train of thought. Going. When we look at code, when we look at wanting to be sustainable and how it is that you can run straight into these legal issues, you know, you think you're just doing the right thing. You want to capture gray water. You want to, have rooftop gardens. You want to have composting toilets. You want to have things that are sustainable. And then you find out, oh, some of these things run into problems with the city code. What's I know Try on Life Farm has had a lot of experience with this, and Brenna Bell's done some great work. Can you let folks know a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, yeah, it's no joke that there's a lot of work to be done on the legal front in the permaculture world. All those things that aren't like tangible and you can't hold them, but they're actually influencing what you're able to do or not do. We call those the invisible structures. And it's really important to focus on them and to recognize where that's either like holding you back or it's putting too much emphasis in one particular place. You know, and one of the examples that I'll give, that was a nice change that the invisible structure shifted to allow for something that was happening that was really beautiful. Kind of goes back to the roots of the city repair project. And then I'll bring it back to TLC Farm in just a second here. Some of you may have seen the intersection paintings around Portland, right?
Absolutely.
And that was not always a legal effort. It didn't start off as a legal effort. But what ended up being the result of those, that not only did the community come together really well, but that the intersection painting accomplished some of the things that the city likes to do and spends a lot more money doing. Now, I don't think we can technically say that it's doing this or that, like it's calming traffic or something like that. But it might have that effect. If you were to observe one of these intersections and experience the drivers as they come by, they're treating that intersection, that roadway, a little bit differently. And it was the success of the first one that really led to the city taking a closer look at it and realizing that this is a net positive thing. And so now there's an ordinance which allows for a neighborhood to close an intersection that's not a major bus route and paint a mural. And that's a very powerful community building effort. And it's also a symbol of the reclaiming of that local identity in that neighborhood. And that's really an essence and theme throughout a lot of this. And to bring it back to, you know, Try and Life Community Farm, it's not that we're trying to like take something, it's we're reclaiming it. It was ours before. We've used rainwater for a really long time. Right.
Well, that's the whole thing about people making that kind of space they want to out of in urban spaces of their yards. Like I said, that long ago people did that. They came to this country from somewhere else and went, well, of course we grow things.
Sure.
That we can eat on there. I mean, what else would you do with? Oh, you put. I'm sorry. I'm just so not a fan of grass. I don't see the purpose.
Lynn does not like lawns.
No.
Not so much.
I love paths and things growing.
And food and such.
Food and, well, also mingle it with beautiful flowers. Yeah. What's wrong with that?
You can do a lot. And
and your rainwater, hello.
So, rainwater, wastewater, it all has a second, third, fourth, fifth use. It's really, again, one of our, it's a creative question. How can we use this as many times as possible? You know, that's another one of the principles of permaculture, is that when you have something and you're going to use that thing, how many different ways can you use it, and how many different places can it yield something for you before you're ultimately finished with it? And then, of course, when you're finished with it, what happens to it then? So whether it's rainwater, whether it's gray water, whether it's black water, or our humanure, or any number of things, how can we take advantage of the energy and the potential of it? Look at this is what permaculture always asks. This is what permaculture designers always say, is that how can we look towards nature for the inspiration on how we can work with something in our lives, in the human context? And so, of course, the classic example is that you can't find waste in nature. Nothing's wasted. It has a role. It has a function, whether it's active or whether it's idle. Maybe it's just providing a little bit of shade for something else to grow. Everything has a function. And so our challenge is to try to implement that kind of strategy in our life. So how many different places can we use that rainwater? You know, maybe you have some chickens and you want to water your chickens. Or maybe if you're still using a flush toilet, you might use your rainwater to do that. Or now I think it's legal to flush toilets with gray water. And that's one of the permitted uses. Of course, it's still a little bit restricted. There's quite a lot of bureaucracy that goes into legalizing these things, and there are a good number of folks that have taken it upon themselves to kind of liberate themselves from some of these invisible structures. It's a bit of a privilege to not fully utilize them.
Really. You might want to explain. Some of our listeners may not know what gray water and black water and all that sort of
the
different grades of water.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are several, and I think purple water is the sort of newest one on the scene, which would be your captured rainwater. Gray water being water that does not have fecal coliform in it, so it's sink water and shower water. And then black water being toilet water primarily, they all need to be treated appropriately. And I think that's something to know, is that it's important to fully understand what it is that you're working with, whether it's water or nuclear power or, you know, the power of holding a city office. It's really important to know the power of these things. And with the waters, particularly in an urban environment where we have a lot of need for water and not a whole lot of surface area to capture that water, creativity is really where it's at. So what can we do with it? Can you water your garden on rainwater alone? A lot of it comes to the question of how much can you store, because we are one of the unique environments where we have a prolonged wet season and a prolonged dry season. So gardening strategies and techniques oftentimes are borrowing from what's been learned from both very wet and very dry climates. We have both of those. And so it becomes a question of that. Now, where can we store this water? The primary place, of course, is in the ground. And that's where you hear a lot of teachers talking about, get it into the soil and add things to your soil that hold on to water. Slow it down, spread it out. Some of our international sources of inspiration are folks like Sepp Holzer in Austria, who's done an amazing job terraforming his area in the Austrian Alps so that the water is really sinking into the ground. It's being stored in plants. Another really neat strategy, and this is one that we can really take advantage of in the urban environment because we have so much concrete, is that where can you store energy from the sun? You know, heat up a rock or a brick wall or something like that. It's holding the heat pretty long to the day. And so you can grow things in those warmer microclimates that you can't grow in other places. And this is all learned from watching nature. Hey, how come that plant grows really well there on that side of the building and not there? It's really
and it's fun when you can just sort of combine that with that. Science in certain ways.
Well, that's just
really
it too.
Fun.
And we have all the tools and resources that we need to be really effective at what we do. It's just putting them together and applying them in a way that's appropriate, both
Absolutely.
Technologically and in terms of what it is that we're trying to do. So we're trying to balance being good little scientists and also having those more year-round observational skills that farmers of yesteryear
really
required.
Well, and good science is observational, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And science has also historically done a really good job of cutting things into pieces and focusing, like hyper-focusing on them and understanding them outside of the context of their interactions with everything else. That's gotten us into a lot of trouble.
True that.
And so that's the beauty of it is that we've done so much splitting apart and figuring out what the minute details are. Now we're in a time of really needing to put things back together again, figure out what our networks are, figure out how things are affecting other things. And so if we have that keen awareness of how things work and we have the ability to recognize how that works over an extended period of time, along with all these in proximity to other things and how they're relating, that's something that you can apply to a lot of things, be it how you're managing your finances or, you know, how you're watering your garden and everything in between.
Excellent.
And, of course, science comes actually from the words, the root of science itself. The word is to split apart, to divide, you know, to cut and cleave.
Yeah, so, where permaculture might be to kind of give a complementary definition would be to uncleave, to reassemble in such a way that you can recognize how the parts relate to each other.
Absolutely. Nice.
Francesca is joining us. I hear good rumor that Francesca is on the air. Good morning to you, Francesca.
Hi. I was just calling to see if there are any like educational or certification programs with permaculture or even biodynamics. And I'm an aspiring farmer. And if there are any, you know, websites or links in terms of education or grants or, you know, job opportunities and stuff like that, because I'm way into this stuff. So
cool, I am too. You called the right show.
Excellent.
There are, and you know, one of the things that Portland's blessed with are a lot of permaculture teachers, a lot of courses. I think Marisha Auerbach is going to be starting up a course really soon. There might be others on the horizon. And there are a number of websites that you can check out and just kind of keep tabs on. One of my favorites is Beaver State Permaculture. There's a teacher by the name of Andrew Milson who's put that together. He's a professor at Oregon State University. He teaches permaculture design courses there. So that's Beaver State Permaculture. Check it out, maybe .com or .org, probably .com. And he does a really good job of collecting information about what's happening. Also, the Permaculture Convergence website has a collection of allies and friends websites at the bottom where you can take a look and see what's coming up. That website, for our listeners here, is www.nwpermaculture.com. And in a few minutes here, we'll go through a little bit about, you know, what is this event. But take a look at some of those resources. I also know that, because my partner is a Waldorf teacher, and she's actually going to be working on a biodynamic farm, making some preparations this weekend. I don't know the name of that farm, but there are opportunities in and around Portland to get involved with some biodynamic farming. I know there's a biodynamic farm that does beekeeping. Jacqueline Freeman is going to be one of the speakers at the Permaculture Convergence. That's Friendly Haven Farm. That's not too far into Portland. Check out websites and look at their links, and pretty quickly you'll get the bigger picture of all these organizations that are working together to try to offer the folks in Portland and beyond the resources they need to figure out how to, you know, be resilient and productive in their lives and do it in a way that is healthy for the environment and the social fabric as well.
It's all over the place. I'm looking at one called The Dirt here.
Bye-bye.
The Dirt's a great one, yes. Yeah, that's a good central point for a lot of information about what's coming up. PPG, Portland Permaculture Guild, is a part of that. Transition Towns, Peak Oil, a lot of those kinds of organizations. You can check that out on thedirt.org.
All right. 503-231-8187, the number to call if you would like to join us on the air, just like Francesca just did. We are talking permaculture with Matt Bebo. And really, I started off looking at the occupying movement, the occupation movement, occupying Wall Street, occupying Portland. Actually, dozens of cities are starting up their own occupations.
And general the cities
and general assemblies.
I love it.
And those that haven't yet are starting, you know, October 6th. Really a huge movement. Really, check out the website. And again, for folks that may have joined us just a scooch late, you can find out a lot on occupyportland.org. But as I'm sifting through information from New York, as I'm sifting through information about, you know, our demands, our voice, wanting to, you know, a lot of it, there's getting big money out, there's getting corruption out, there's trying to get accountability, you know, and you know, taking care of ourselves, health care for all, decent standard of living for all of, you know, these sorts of things that are good. And I realize that a lot of this, we're looking at our culture, which is just sick at this point. You know, it's a very sick culture. It's very involved in consumption. It sort of glorifies a dead or commodified world where things are seen as very separate, where things are seen as a point of resource only and nothing with inherent good, and that includes people as well as the planet that we sustain ourselves with. You know, and to me, part of the solution, I mean, of course, yes, we need to do what we need to do to get banksters out of the political scene, to get banksters off of the trip of running our lives, and to hold big money accountable, all of these things. But in just that way that nature abhors a vacuum and it doesn't really do any good to banish without invoking, to me, permaculture is one of the obvious points that we can then say, well, we may be against these things, but permaculture is part of the solution.
Permaculture is very proactive, and that's one of the things I
like
about it, too.
And it's accessible right here, right now. We can all start.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to wait for anyone.
Yeah, it's true. I think that folks, by and large, are just totally fed up about just being idle and watching other people make decisions about what our future's like. And the permaculture movement isn't looking backwards and saying, oh, well, we shouldn't be doing this or we shouldn't be doing that. It's really looking forward and saying, this is where we need to be spending our time. This is how we can understand what our role and obligation is and how we can live a healthy, full life in such a way that it's not, you know, kicking the issues down another couple generations or totally messing up the place that we're living or where somebody else is living. You know, that's another major thing, too, is that, you know, we're in a forested city for all intents and purposes.
It's true.
By and large, the United States is reforesting. If you're just kind of looking around you, you might not realize that, well, where is it coming? Like, where are all these resources that we're getting? Where are they coming from? And the truth is, I mean, all around the world, there are a lot of situations that are pretty ugly that are bringing you what you're consuming. And as a model, and we're all designers. I'll kind of just put it out there. Like every single one of us, you all turned on your radio today, and that might be a habit of yours. So that's a design of your day. We wake up, brush our teeth, take a shower, go to work. You probably have a pattern for going to work. You probably have a pattern for like when you walk around the neighborhood. We're all designers.
We design our lives, Matt?
We design our lives. And you know, what we're trying to do here is recognize that with a little bit more intention and a little bit more awareness, we can design our lives in ways that are regenerative to ourselves, to our culture, and to the environment. And closing the loops is a pretty major part of how we're needing to be more intentional about our design. The current system is a throughput system. The market economy pretty much works on the principle that as the more stuff you get through it, the more it thrives. And so you get organizations, companies that are designing products that are meant to break because that supports that system's design. So it's very creative, it's very effective, but it's not getting us anywhere that we want to be. So part of this, and this also ties into why people are occupying Wall Street and other places, is because they're really sick of that design. Mm-hmm. We need a different design, folks. We need to change the way that we're living our lives. We need to change the way that our country operates. Love the country. Government can use a realignment, right? So
we can be the country's chiropractors.
Yeah, the chiropractors of those invisible structures.
Acupuncturists, if you will.
Yeah, so close those loops, you know.
That chi move.
There's a company, I forget the name of it, but there are some companies that are actually doing this, and they're props to them because they're, you know, mm-hmm. against the flow for all intents and purposes in the larger scene. For example, a carpet company that doesn't sell you carpet, but it actually leases you the carpet. And at the end life of that carpet, the company takes it back and repurposes it, you know, repairs it, refurbishes it, and then leases it out to the next organization. And so that's really cool. They've closed the loop. They're not just pushing carpet that eventually ends up in the dump. And if every company, say, were responsible for the end life of their product, we would be in a much different situation than we are now.
Boy, howdy, yeah.
There's a great little movie.
Let's look at nuclear power again.
Okay, yeah, no. There's sorry, a great
well,
little...
Or restaurants, you know. In the
perfect example.
People yeah. Used to take the, or like food to go when a container that you brought back.
Yeah. And it's just yeah. You know,
when will
convenience.
Plastic bags be going?
What's the expensive convenience? Check out this little clip on YouTube, Story of Stuff. Y'all seen this?
No.
Brilliant. A brilliant little movie that just shows graphically, because it helps to see this stuff, how the system currently works. And it really is a throughput system. And it's really interesting when you learn that that radio that you just bought that broke on you like 5 months later, it was designed to break on you, folks.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah. Exactly. We have Alan on the line. Good morning, Alan. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I just kind of wanted to interject, I guess, a bit of humor. All of this.
We love humor.
Because, you know, this whole thing of permaculture, you know, it's not new. It's a number of years ago, 10, 11, 12 years ago, so I got a little house here in her southeast, and, you know, small yard and all that. And my neighbor, you know, she was really into this, you know, like edible landscape, you know, like where everything growing, you know, any plant, you know. I guess there's a lot of plants around that people use in their yards, but, you know, they're like poisonous, you know, like they eat the leaves and stuff. And so that was my first sort of inkling into this, you know, permaculture thing. Well, you can just plant berry plants in the ground. They just grow. Yeah, they do. They're all over the place. So anyway, she cautioned me about the Jerusalem artichokes. And they grow really, really well around here. And, you know, bunnies love eating them and everything. They're pretty tasty, kind of, you know.
I love them. I love Jerusalem artichokes.
Yeah.
Is there a problem with them?
She cautioned us. They will get out of control. Anyway.
Too many Jerusalem artichokes. Gotcha. Okay.
My backyard, I had to start a cleanup. It was 3/4 Jerusalem artichokes. And these things grow tall. I mean, they grow really tall. 7 or 8. And we were having to go through the yard, you know, just like a friggin' jungle.
Sounds like you need to have a big neighborhood potluck at your house.
Roast up all the Jerusalem artichokes.
Yeah, numbers.
But anyway, I like this whole idea of the edible landscape. And I think eventually the nut trees you put in, the fruit trees, I think we're feeding more of the birds and the squirrels with them than we are actually taking stuff
well,
off.
Well, they need to eat, too.
They need to eat, too. That's right. But, you know, we get the lower-hanging stuff. You know, they get the stuff up high. You know, so a little sharing going on there.
Well, and sharing actually is a part of permaculture philosophy, isn't it?
It is, yeah. We kind of, kind of the buzzwords, is how many ecological functions can something fill? Yeah. A fruit tree is feeding a lot more than just people, and you know, one of the issues, we're trying to reframe our way of thinking about these things. Fruit trees, they make a big mess, right? Well, if you don't pick the fruit, they do.
Right.
If you're picking the fruit, it's actually a pretty good situation. And there are organizations in Portland that will come by and collect that fruit. If you have a fruit tree in your yard and you can't quite get around to harvesting the fruit, give Portland Fruit Tree Project a call, and they will schedule a work party to come out, harvest the fruit, give, you know, a portion of it to you because it's the tree that it's in your yard, and then they'll donate the rest to the Oregon Food Bank or another worthy organization. So if the problem in this case is, well, it just makes a big mess, that's where the design kicks in, and you got to take a step back and say, well, the problem is the solution here. The problem is that we're generating fruit. Well, the solution is that we're generating fruit,
right.
You know, and so it's just a matter of where we put it. And you know, wouldn't it be great if there's a neighborhood that has a number of fruit trees, if there's an overabundance, even locally, you don't need an organization to come in even, you know, the neighborhood, if there are folks that like to bake have it be an annual thing. It's also recreating that tradition and those events and activities that allow us to celebrate that time of year, getting back into a cultural groove where time of year is on the front of our minds and not the back of our minds. It's the time of year for this. It's the time of year for this.
But I can get strawberries in December. I just have to go into the, you know, supermarket and taste a little styrofoamy.
And those winter tomatoes,
they don't really taste like strawberries
fabulous.
At all, but they're bright.
Yeah, habit and convenience again, you know. Yeah. This year particularly, I was really waiting for those tomatoes to come out.
Yeah.
And we're used to getting what we want whenever we want it, and it's sort of this privilege that apparently is ours, and it's the exercising of this privilege that keeps this pattern in place where, we're drawing in a lot of resources from really far out. We live in the Willamette Valley, one of the most fertile valleys in the country. And that's primarily because the ones east of here have been degraded over the years. And we have this local abundance and resource of good soil, good food. How can we fully utilize that? There's a big effort going on right now with schools and school lunches. So I'll definitely acknowledge here the farm to school and school garden movement. I'm a garden educator. I teach at 2 elementary schools a week. And there's a lot of great work that's happening, getting kids into the garden, getting kids aware of their connection with food, their connection with the soil, with some of these really important cycles, the water cycle, the carbon cycle. And simultaneously, the effort to connect local produce, local food, with the schools. Now, I don't know if our listeners are aware of this, but there's pretty much one central facility in the city of Portland that all of the food that is going to be eaten at the schools comes out of in the mornings. It's shipped to the schools. A lot of these schools don't even have functioning cafeterias anymore, and it's reheated and served a lot of the food, particularly in the schools that have the most sensitivity, the schools that are Title I that get funding from the government for cheaper lunch, cheaper breakfast even. A lot of that food is very high in fat, very high in carbohydrates, very high in sugar.
And salt. So you're saying ketchup is not a vegetable to serve?
follow that one, right? That's a fun exercise. So the tomato that went into that ketchup, that's a fun exercise to do with some of these school kids.
Oh, like, that's a great idea.
Where did this come from? And trace it back. The kids that are
Beats Where's Waldo.
Needing the most healthy food are the ones that are sometimes in some of the neighborhoods that they don't have access to that. There might not be a market that has fresh food. There might not be a farmer's market. And so the kids that are in the most need the freshest food, need that fertility
the
and that nutrition that's the fresh stuff. So the farm to school movement is connecting the farmers with the schools. We live in the Willamette Valley. We can be feeding these kids really good, healthy food. And at the same time, we can be teaching them about where that food came from. And what comes out of that, there's so many things, not just healthier food habits, but the kids also learn, they develop more of an ecological ethic, but it's not one that's been fed to them. It's one that they've created on their own. And that's important, that developing those ethics themselves. And then youth development, these kids are learning to share some of those cooperative skills. Gardening together is a great exercise that complements all of the competitive activities that these children experience pretty regularly, be it in the classroom and, competing for grades and teachers' attention, to sports where you're competing for winning. There's a lot that can be addressed in the school garden. That's just one example of how we can move from, more competitive to collaborative and go local and have it be really effective.
Awesome. We have only a few minutes left. We have Makai on the line. Good morning, Makai. You're on the air.
Blessings, everybody. Hi, Bebo.
Hey, what's up, Makai?
So I just wanted to toot your horn real quick. I think it's great. The Convergence, I don't know if you touched, but it is child-friendly. They are asking lots of children to come, and we are providing a teepee for the children to hang out with that weekend, which will be nice to keep them out of the weather. And so that's the thing. But I want to talk a little bit about the biodynamics and mixing the biodynamics with the permaculture. I run a little farm called Oregon Urban Family Farms. It's a designer CSA up here in Northeast Portland. And I've applied the biodynamics to the permaculture in the agriculture division of what I'm doing. It makes my life so much easier.
You know what? Some of our listeners might not know what biodynamics are.
Biodynamics is using the stellar, using the pull of the planets, using the pull of the moon, the manipulation of the water, and how certain times of the month quickly explain, certain times of the month at the new moon is a great time to propagate. It's a good time to pop your seed because the push of the moon is so powerful with the water in the seed that it pushes the water from one side of the seed to the other and explodes the side of the seed out and allows the tap root to tap into the ground much easier and much faster, which makes a stronger plant. Then you have 7 days of root growth, and then you have 7 days of root and leaf growth, and then you have your full moon. The full moon is great to transplant your plants because you can literally, I'll use the analogy, you can cut Bebo's arm off. At the same time I'm cutting Bebo's arm off, which is a horrible experience to think about, his arm is actually growing back immediately at the same time as I'm cutting. So that makes the healthier transplant, and then you go into 7 days of root growth, and then you go into 7 days of rest because the gravity is so strong. So what's happening is I'm allowing the plants to work for themselves. I'm applying it to the permaculture principles, and it makes me a lazy farmer. So it really gets you tuned in to what's going on around you, because what's going on with the plants is going on with us. And so the water manipulation goes through everything in this planet, us, the planet, all that stuff. So I think it's just a great thing to do, and I think if people were able to apply some of these practices, it'd make their life a lot easier. And what's really interesting I've been finding is applying the biodynamics and the permaculture to my life, to my business practices. And applying permaculture to your business practice, you'll find that you don't venture out so far into society anymore, because most of the stuff is being where you're at. And my sanctuary is my house, and I don't want to leave my house because this is where I've created my sanctuary. So I try to create my life around my space and then venture out when I need to, which makes me sustainable because I'm not using carbon. My carbon footprint's much lower. So
great.
So if people can apply this permaculture principles and the biodynamic methods, they can do great things. A little thing for the website, if you're interested in learning a little bit about biodynamic and agriculture, there's a website called, if you Google Steiner Lectures Audio, it will come up on a website and you'll have a picture of Rudolf Steiner, and underneath there says lectures, and you click the lectures and all of his lectures and all of Rudolf Steiner and Waldorf's lectures come up. You click on the book, they open up, and they've all been translated into English. And so you can get this education for free, pretty much, and I think it's a great resource to have, and you can listen to it while you're making dinner and stuff like that. So
thanks, really Makai. Cool. Thanks very much for your call.
Yeah, that's definitely another place where we're drawing some of that wisdom in the Waldorf education and biodynamic farming. At Try and Live Community Farm, we have an outdoor school called Mother Earth School. It's a preschool and kindergarten. They're outside all the time. And this school is doing the really amazing work of combining Waldorf education with outdoor education, with permaculture, with primitive skills. And these kids, 3, 4, 5, and 6 years old, are just thriving in it.
Yeah.
Mother Earth School is providing the childcare for the Northwest Permaculture Convergence.
Awesome.
So that's really exciting. Makai is gracious enough to donate the use of his teepee. So that'll be one of the spots where the kids can hang out. And the Permaculture Convergence itself, not only does it have a really amazing kids' village with some of the teachers at Mother's School, but it has so many other aspects. And so I'll go through them really quickly. The event, we've talked about the Thursday event a little bit. And, you know, we've got bike tours during the day, and there'll be a series of panelists in the evening time and a community dinner. But the 3 days at the Columbia County Fairgrounds are pretty packed too. There are 7 educational tracks from urban permaculture, rural permaculture, social permaculture, permaculture and education. So those will be happening simultaneously. So folks will not only have the opportunity to choose between 7 educational tracks, there'll also be a hands-on area where there'll be a number of hands-on demonstrations. There'll be a Skillshare village. Now, we're doing this work to combine, to bring together the primitive skills movement, which is thriving locally, thriving nationally, and the permaculture scene. I kind of like to joke that the permaculture folks and the primitive skills folks, they really need to get together. That's one hot date. You know, they need to check each other out more.
Yeah,
so we're going to have blacksmithing and primitive pottery and wet felting and drop spindles and basket weaving and a number of other skills. We're also going to have the showing of a fantastic movie by the producer of The Real Dirt on Farmer John. This movie is called Queen of the Sun. It's about the plight of the bee, all the crazy stuff that's happening with bees and why pollinators are so important. We're going to have that showing on Saturday night. And one of our local beekeeper friends that I mentioned earlier, Jacqueline Freeman of Friendly Haven Farm, is going to give a workshop. There'll even be an opportunity to dance and to really embody this work, because we've got so much stress built up in our bodies. We can't be very effective to the full extent. There'll be an ecstatic dance. There'll be Omiza River's going to play. And Omiza River's going to actually play before and after the bee movie, because they're in that bee movie. There's so much happening. There's going to be a seed swap. There's going to be a song circle, a storytelling circle. Check it out on the website. That website, again, is www.northwestpermaculture.com. We're talking about the Northwest Permaculture Convergence, October 13th to 16th. It's coming right up. Check us out on the web. Get your tickets, because we're not sure we're going to have a whole lot left at the door.
And just to clarify, it's nwpermaculture.com, since Northwest is known by many different ways of being on the internets.
That's right, nwpermaculture.com. Check it out. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Leave a post. Tell us what you think.
Excellent. And we are just about at the end of time. I did get a message from some Occupy Portland folks to be very specific around the General Assembly meeting tonight in Waterfront Park, 7 p.m., meeting under the newly constructed covered area at the north end of Waterfront Park. The Facebook page is at facebook.com/OccupyPortland. And then there is a Twitter feed, which is at OccupyOregon, #OccupyPortland. I don't know anything about twitting, but
don't
there,
look at me.
If you do, I'm sure you can find it now.
Tweet if you need to.
So, Matt, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. We're hoping that folks can get inspired and come on out and check it out. And it's not necessary that you come. You know, there are a lot of ways to get plugged in. We're blessed. We've got a lot of opportunities in Portland, so look for them. There's a permaculture meetup group. There's a permaculture guild.
How do people get a hold of the permaculture meetup group, for example?
Check out the meetup website and type in Portland Permaculture. That'll come up. There'll be workshop offerings that are springing up all over the place. Transition Towns is doing great work. There are so many organizations. I couldn't list them all in the amount of time that we have left. But as soon as you start paying attention, checking it out, all of a sudden you get plugged into the network pretty quickly. So find your way in, and we'll meet you there.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Matt, for joining us this morning. That's the Northwest Permaculture Convergence happening just in a couple of weeks. Again, more information at nwpermaculture.com. And one more time, Occupy Portland starting next Thursday at noon. Next Thursday at noon, meeting at the north end of Waterfront Park, going to Pioneer Square. And who knows what happens after that, right? So the General Assembly is meeting tonight, 7 o'clock at what do we call that? The thing I've been talking about, Waterfront Park, 7 o'clock in the north end under the newly constructed covered area. Thanks very much to all. Get active, stay active. Things are happening. Be a part of it. Be a part of a movement for sustainable change. And as Dr. Cornell West said just earlier this week, don't be afraid to say revolution.
It may have been Camelot for Jack and Jacqueline, but on the Che Guevara highway, filling up with gasoline. Fidel Castro's brother spies a rich lady who's crying over the luxury's disappointment, so he walks over and he's trying to sympathize with her. But he thinks that he should warn her that the third world is just around the corner. In the Soviet Union, a scientist is blinded by the resumption of nuclear testing, and he is reminded that Dr. Robert Oppenheimer's optimism fell at the first hurdle. In the cheese pavilion, and the only noise I hear is the sound of someone stacking chairs and mopping up spilled beer. and someone asking questions and basking in the light of the 15 fame-filled minutes of the fanzine writer. In pop and politics, he asks me what the use is. I offer him embarrassment and my usual excuses while looking down the corridor out to where the van is waiting. I'm looking for the Great Leap Forward. Sales are organised and pamphlets have been posted. Even after closing time, there's still parties to be hosted. You can be active with the activists or sleeping with the sleepers while you're waiting for the Great Leap Forward. Oh, one leap forward, two leaps back. Will politics get me the sack? Waiting for the Great Leap Forward. Blacklist, I want to be on it. Waiting for the Great Leap Forward. Oh, it's a mighty long way down rock and roll from top of the pops to drawing a thumb. You're waiting for the Great Leap Forward. If no one out there understands, just start your own revolution and cut out the middle man. For the Great Leap Forward. Perfect world, we're all singing tune, but this is reality. So give us a run. Waiting for the Great Leap Forward. So join the struggle while you make the revolution.